listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician.
Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 62 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin, and joining me for this roundtable edition is Chris and Robert. Hey guys.
Hello.
How are you guys doing?
Great.
Good, good.
Yeah. My chair's a little squeaky. I don't know if you guys can hear that.
Yeah, we're in a new location here for this podcast. We're next to my office. Normally we're in my office, but now we're next to my office.
The podcasting room.
That's right. So it may sound a little more echoey because, you know, I have that one picture on the wall in my office that absorbs sound.
Right.
Well, I wanted to welcome any potential new listeners. This past week, we have a new email newsletter going out from CD Baby called The DIY Musician that's going to piggyback a lot of the content we're producing here for the podcast. So I'm sure we'll get a lot of new listeners off of that. So we're excited about it. So if you're new to the podcast, welcome. And you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes or any other podcasting service like Mediafly, or you can subscribe by email from the podcast website, and it'll just send you the new episodes when they come. And you can also find us on Twitter at cdbaby_podcast. So just wanted to make sure you're aware of that off the top. And lots of stuff been going on. My band's been recording. That's been a lot of...
How'd it go?
It's going good. It's going really good. Lots of insights that I'm putting together. I've been working on a bunch of little videos and some audio material, so to use
to make music in the studio. Have you been
making... Yeah, we've been doing that too, but okay. You know how it is. Of course I show up everywhere with a video camera, an audio recorder, and then all my gear as well, so
everything is a potential podcast.
That's right.
And this is your band Hello Morning.
Yeah, so, you know, it's been kind of a cool process because this is the first time in a few years that I've been recording a serious project of my own that I've been a part of. I've played on other people's, but so it's kind of interesting to try and put to, you know, use some of the information we discuss on the podcast.
Well, you know, it's interesting too, because I think you're probably about 6 months ahead of where I am with my band right now. We haven't played our first show yet. We just booked our first show, and we don't have enough songs to get in the studio yet, but we'll get there.
You have enough songs to play a show?
We have six.
Okay, well,
that's right.
You can jam them out a little too.
Yeah, totally.
But one thing I was thinking about while in the studio, I don't know if our listeners would be interested or not in having some shows that talk more about gear or recording, because, you know, we don't talk about it all that much on the show, but certainly you could get us going for hours on end talking about equipment. I'm sure that's not a problem, but I figured people would be bored to death. But if that's something you're interested in, and putting together an episode that features some, you know, gear that's being used in the studio and stuff like that, that would just let us know, and we'll work on that.
We're happy to oblige.
Yeah.
Or even, you know, like home recording stuff, you know,
if
you guys would be interested in knowing what people use to record themselves at home.
And also, like, you know... I always love talking about guitar amps and guitars and pedals, and I don't do it on this podcast because I want to retain our listeners, not right. bore them to death. But if it's something people are interested in, let us know, and we'll be happy to oblige. So, all right. Well, and last thing I'd say is if you're interested in following along the my recording stuff, I'm just K Bruner on Twitter. I spent plenty of time twittering about it too while I was there.
Okay.
That's what you do.
Don't
in between
save up
takes.
Any inspiration. Just tweet about it.
That's right. That's right. All right. Let's get into some news.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
Music.
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 News.
Retail giant Walmart has announced that it will shut down the servers maintaining access to customers who purchase security-protected songs from its online store before the company abandoned the use of Digital Rights Management, or DRM, in February 2008. In an email to customers, Walmart suggested that customers who purchase DRM-wrapped songs back them up on a CD. Otherwise, after October 9, they will no longer be accessible should one need to reinstall their operating system or suffer a system crash. eMusic has announced that the Sony Music back catalog, which includes labels like Arista, Columbia, Epic, and RCA, among many others, will finally be available through eMusic's download service. This would be the first of the four major labels to open up to the pricing model eMusic offers. The major trade-off seems to be that eMusic has agreed to slightly raise prices and reduce the number of downloads for some of its monthly plans, in effect imposing a per-track price increase that is higher than its current prices, which range from 40 cents per track for the eMusic Basic plan to 25 cents per track for the eMusic Connoisseur plan. What we don't know yet is exactly which plans will be affected and what the price increases will be. This news has not gone over well with the eMusic subscriber base, as the independent vibe is what has attracted many to eMusic in the first place. And as of recording this podcast, there's not been an official comment by eMusic to the customer backlash, so it'd be interesting to see how they handle it. After attracting 27 million registered users with its free ad-supported custom music streaming service, Pandora has launched its first major push for paid subscriptions with Pandora One. For $36 a year, users get six features: all audio and visual ads eliminated, higher quality streaming, 5 hours before timeout so you can turn it on and let it run, desktop app that enables play without a browser, mini web-based player, and custom player skins. So if you're a big Pandora user, that might be worth the $36 a year.
It's pretty cool, $36 a year. That's not too much. And I do love Pandora.
Well, it had to happen. File sharing has finally made it to Twitter. On the new site, filetwr.com, users can upload a file and then tweet about it to zillions of others at no cost. Now leaked tracks that no one has ever heard from your favorite artists can reach millions faster than anyone ever imagined. While the service seems to be very useful for legal file sharing, I'm sure they'll be feeling the heat from the usual suspects like the RIAA very soon. It will be interesting to watch how this one unfolds. And that's the news that I thought was interesting this week.
Some real interesting stuff. I mean, the Twitter, you know, a lot of times people, you know, the police, the internet police out there who are trying to shut down the illegal distribution of media, like, they can't be as quick as Twitter. They're not going to be able to shut those files down fast enough.
And they could shut the company down.
Yeah, and that's right. Where that website's probably going to find themselves in trouble, because I believe that was the whole thing with that lawsuit that happened with Pirate Bay recently, that they were thrown in jail because their service was somehow providing the link up and encouraging file sharing. And because, I forget how, it gets real technical with how the technology actually works.
Any Twitter user could do that. Like, if you are, you know, if you're privy, if you work at the Pirate Bay or whatever, and you know what's out there, you could just constantly be Twittering, like, here's the link to this free download, here's the link to this free download. And I guess the only real way for Twitter to stop that would be to block users who are providing those links.
Or shut down the company, because Twitter's not the one providing it. It's a different company that's providing the service. Right. So they're letting you upload files to their servers. And then, you know, because Twitter, the way it's constructed, their API works, anybody can build a program off of it so they can do all sorts of things. And that's why you see this explosion of websites popping up. And so that service is just using the Twitter API to power their file sharing. And so it's going to be an interesting year, because things get faster and faster and faster, and it, you know, the list of leaked albums is growing by the truckload. You know, right. Every week you hear more and more albums being leaked. So
your Hello Morning album could already be online, even though it's not finished.
I know, it could be.
Finished it for you.
Maybe they did. If you did, please send it to us. We'd like to hear how it turned out.
I have a funny feeling if it was online, it probably would have been Kevin who put it online.
Yeah, yeah.
But speaking of, when I was in the studio Twittering, somebody said, his Twitter name is King Never, he listens to the podcast. He said, you should put tracks online and let people do remixes. And I said, that's a great idea. We're going to do that. So
cool.
We'll definitely put them up so people can do their own mixes and maybe even release a separate version of the EP that's all just fan mixes. And then we can credit everyone who mixed
that
it.
That would be totally awesome.
Yep. Well, we're going to get into our episode recap for last week. And definitely some mixed reactions on this interview, have to say. Brian, our president at CD Baby, asked if he could interview his friend. And of course, anytime, you know, someone comes in and wants to support the podcast, like the president of CD Baby, we're going to let him. So Brian wanted to interview his friend. And I know that he really wanted the interview to focus more on David's artistic career, because Brian was telling me some of the stories afterwards. And it was pretty funny. I mean, there was a lot of, he just kept hitting a wall right and left, and he kind of glossed over that in the interview. And so Brian was trying to draw that out of him.
I think there's a lot of value to the interview.
I loved the interview. Like, listening to it, it was fascinating.
You know, like I said, there was some mixed reactions to it. So some people liked it because they like hearing the inside of the big music business, the stuff that we're not a part of. And to me, I think it's interesting to hear, just to hear the contrast of how different the two worlds are.
Yeah.
Someone left a comment on the show, a note saying that not one word about being involved with music because it's art, sad. While, yes, that's how it was, I thought it drew a good line of distinction that, you know, there is that world out there that's how they pursue music and put together music. It's all a package, it's a product. And the thing that I find interesting is that so many artists I talk to that have a good thing going, how instead of keeping developing their art from the independent perspective, they start trying to jump into that machine.
Yeah.
And obviously, if you're an artist that writes your own songs and you're getting signed to a label for that, they're not going to, you know, go find someone to write songs for you or go find a producer without you saying, most likely. If you're in country music, chances are good they'll go find someone to write songs for you. Yeah. But anyway, so to me, it's just interesting to hear that. But then to know how many artists try to jump into that world, even though they say they're all for art.
And disgusted by it, right?
Yeah, and disgusted by it. How when they start getting some popularity, they suddenly start going,
Well, in David's defense, too, a number of times in the interview, he said, but, you know, we're a pop label. This is what we do. This is how the machine works. If you want to be Radiohead, or if you want to be on a rock label, or if you want it, he was very aware that there are multiple kinds of pursuits.
It's not avant-garde jazz. It's not opera. It's not, you know, like they are going for the gold. Like this is about money, you know?
Yeah. And so I thought he was very clear about that. And I thought that was good to understand, because, you know, sometimes you talk to people at labels and they tend to, some of them think that they're making artistic expressions, making that kind of music.
Yeah.
And, you know, he knew what his place was, you know. And
there's definitely art involved, but there's art involved. I mean, the art is spread out across not just songwriting or song production, but across marketing and management and producers, and everybody gets a little bit of a creative say, and, you know, they bring in, you know,
it's more like making a movie.
Totally.
Yeah, it is, because the artist is like an actor. They are providing something, but it's not about them as much as it is about the whole package of the product.
And everybody's working for their jobs.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's doing the best job they can to put in their little piece of something in order to support the community, which is the business, you know.
And the other reason why I thought the interview would be somewhat interesting to our audience is that I know many of you are denying it right now, but I follow many of you on Twitter, and I know you watch American Idol, and I know you watch America's Got Talent and Britain's Got Talent and the X Factor, because I see you tweeting about it. And so I thought you might like to see what exactly is the experience for those artists after the fact, when the show is over, and it's not about the art as much as, you know, it's not this person has earned respect in the industry, so now they get to go make the records they want to make.
Right.
It's not that at all. They have very little say.
And you know what, though? I mean, of course, David didn't mention this, and he would probably argue with me, but, like, these, from the time that they win the contest, or, you know, that they appear on TV and put on their album, that's when they're shining brightest. It's just downhill from there, right? I mean,
For a lot of them, it is. Yeah. And actually, we have a call about that later on in the podcast.
I mean, in a way, you know, in a way, the companies are exploiting that point in their career. And then, yeah, I mean, it's possible for them to, you know, reinvent themselves, but you're never going to make probably as much money and have as much momentum as when you're on a national television show, right. You know?
Yeah. And to me, that's the whole thing that's interesting about it is how powerful the TV is when it comes to music, whether or not you like art, whether or not you like that type of pop music. There's other shows that have done different types of music, maybe not as popular as American Idol, that have really shown how powerful it is when you combine the two. And so, you know, we're going to be spending some time talking about video and upcoming episodes and things like that, how you can kind of, I don't know, capitalize on the idea of music with like some sort of video content, not like a licensing kind of way, but, you know, just what you can do on YouTube and such like that. So
the troubling thing for me is that I feel like so much of the population isn't really drawing a clear distinction between entertainment and art. And I think it's really scary when you start focus grouping music.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk about. I had the question that I wanted to throw out was, do shows like American Idol, America's Got Talent, X Factor, Britain's Got Talent, and I think they have one for every country on the planet. Do all the rest of these that bring music to the mainstream culture help or hurt the cause of the indie artist?
I think that one thing to always keep in mind with these reality shows is that the people who win, the people that make it to the end, the final round, are not the best performers, they're not the best artists, they're not the best singers, they're not the best songwriters or karaoke singers. They are the best at being on that show and entertaining people, because that's what the producers want.
Right.
They want somebody who has drama, who's gonna, you know, who's gonna get nervous and cry or start, you know, a fight between him and one of the other contestants. You know, mm-hmm. They want drama. It's bring people to the TV show is what's going to, you know, motivate the producers to keep somebody on longer, or to, you know, they realize who's being rooted for or who's making the most drama or causing the most people to watch the show. Mm-hmm. And those are the people who make it to the end or win.
Right. And it also, like, they go through so many filters. Basically, the whole, you know, if we're just talking about American Idol, you know, millions of viewers every night or every week get to do this sort of weighing in. And so after a season, you've had hundreds of opportunities to chop out anything that's maybe just a little bit too unique or a little bit that sticks out too far in one direction. So basically, yeah, you end up with this rounded, homogenized thing that in the end appeals to the most people, but may not be the greatest at, yeah, any one thing, like you were, yeah, saying. To Kevin's question, though, I don't think that these shows, I mean, maybe in some sense they hurt, but I don't think they're hurting indie music or DIY music, because if you look at it, American Idol's popularity has grown and grown and grown over the last, what, 8-10 years, however long it's been on, which is also the same time period in which indie music has done better and better.
Yeah.
So obviously, if you just look at numbers, it doesn't seem like it's hindering anything.
Honestly, I just think it's karaoke.
Right. With a live band.
Yeah, it's karaoke with a live band, you know? I mean, like, that's what these people have been doing all their lives, is basically practicing singing along to other people's songs and, you know, emulating other artists. And I don't really watch the shows, so you can judge me.
Robert, why are you wearing an American Idol t-shirt then?
But as far as, you know, when I flip through the channels on the occasion I have want to watch these shows, like, it just seems like karaoke to me, you know? Like, if you want to be a great, if you're the best karaoke singer in town, go try out for American Idol. Maybe you'll get on the show.
Well, I think, but they do actually, in some sense, put them through a little bit of artist development. I mean, they force them to do some things that really bring them to the next level, and obviously they're for pop music, but just visually seeing that, I think, can be helpful to artists. But also, to me, when it, you know, a lot of real musicians hate these shows, but it's really gotten a lot of people more excited about music in general. And like Chris was saying, that indie music has grown and done better and better. And I think for a lot of people, for mainstream culture, this is a really kind of an entry point into music, whether you like it or not. I mean, pop music's generally what the masses first experience. And then if it gets people more excited about music and wanting to dig in deeper, I think it helps. Now, then there is the other side of it, does dumb down a lot of things. And then you get a lot of young artists who, instead of learning to develop their talent and really digging into an instrument, a lot of them feel like, well, I didn't make the tryouts at American Idol, so I'm going to give up.
And that's all that music is.
Yeah.
Or the ones that do well and maybe have something within them that is unique, rather than exploring that because it may ostracize them and offend some viewers and lose them votes, they get pushed and steered towards wearing the same kind of clothes that such and such wears and doing the same kind of vocal styling and the same kind of tunes. And, oh, this year we're going to need another rocker. Okay, yeah. This year we're going to need another R&B diva. Like,
right.
So rather than them becoming themselves, they become what they think they should be to win, which is basically what you were saying before. But I just think, like, some of my favorite people, like, you know, Tom York, he wouldn't win because he's got a weird eye. Like, you know, Ian Anderson, he stands on one leg and plays a flute. The flute is not cool, so that wouldn't win.
They like to bring in the just for the,
but they
like
don't win. They won't make.
They bring in the weirdos in the beginning, you know, and let them, you know, coast along for a while. Yeah. So Tom York may have made, you know, the cut for a while before he was cut out.
Paul Simon, too short. You know, you could think of all.
Well,
this.
And I think that that goes to show the point that I don't know if we talked about in the podcast. It was an episode of This American Life where one of their segments was about how these people set out to make the most pleasing music, you know, across the board.
Right.
And how they tried to, they set out to make the worst music across the board. And so they did this big survey and got all this feedback about instruments people hated, what they liked about singers, instruments they liked, styles they liked. And it turned out that after gathering all that information, the song that should have been the most acceptable and liked was hideous, and they did exactly what everyone wanted. It was like this kind of adult contemporary new agey pop thing.
Just because it was so bland.
It was so bland and boring. It was, you know, great for having in the background of a doctor's office, but as far as like being interesting to listen to or somebody want to buy.
But then bad song that had like glockenspiel and saxophone,
it had accordion
and accordion,
and it had an opera singer rapping, because rap and opera singing were like the two rated so low. The song was amazing. It was so interesting, and it was literally like it was very well done. It wasn't like they just threw a bunch of crap together, like everyone hates these, so we're just gonna go screw around. They actually tried to make a real song using those elements.
I'm either having deja vu or we've talked about this before.
We did. I think I mentioned it
before.
But it fits in this setting where you're talking about, you know, when you try to make music for the masses that's really just manufactured for them, you lose all authenticity. And sometimes, you know, vanilla is the best-selling flavor, but it's vanilla, you know. Sometimes you want some rocky road. And
sometimes you want some rock and roll.
All right, we're done.
My last thought that I had about this interview is I was trying to think of someone who is kind of a more recent artist who is in a way sort of from that world and from that music machine that, because of how the entertainment factor has been integrated into it, wouldn't have a chance nowadays. And I was thinking about Alanis Morissette, like 15 years ago, like she did kind of come from the music machine, but because of her like shrill voice and her overly emotive lyrics and stuff, like,
right.
I don't think that she would even have a chance now. And she, what does she sell, like 15 million records?
Yeah, that first album, I think she's still the highest selling female album, or debut for sure, debut selling female album. So yeah.
I mean, like it or not, it was sort of unique for what was around it at the time, I guess, and I just don't think that she would win on American Idol.
I think that there's a difference between like a pop singer who transcends the blandness and does something, you know, that has a lot of staying power, and a pop singer that does everything right and then just fades out because everyone gets bored and forgets about them. Right?
Well, and I think that point is easily made when American Idol has 27 million people all clamoring at the end, who's going to win? And then when that person's album comes out, it sells 200,000 copies. I mean, that's just, I mean, because nobody cared. It was an interesting show to watch, but as far as the music, we don't take you seriously. Yeah. Where someone else who's really has, you know, a story around their music that's built over years. It's that's what people.
They probably sell more copies of DVDs of the show than actual CDs of the albums.
It was funny that at the end of the interview, though, Brian did start digging into David's past of being in this band that seemed to be taking off, and he was doing all the booking himself and arranging all the radio and PR spots. That would have been really fascinating.
Well, that's what he was wanting, because basically he was in a band called Idlewilds that was signed. But then another band came up named Idlewilds, and there ended up being this lawsuit. And it ended up poorly, got dropped, and all this stuff. Then he was working with a pretty popular songwriter, I guess, who ended up dying on him. Then he was doing stuff on his own under his own name, and then David Gray, that we all, everyone thought that this podcast was with, became popular, and suddenly he got dropped. So it was just all, that's just the abbreviated version. There was just like turn after event, labels dropping, labels shutting down, just everything going wrong. So, and that's, I think, what Brian was wanting to focus on.
Can you guys hear the smooth jazz coming from the customer service?
It sounds like they're having a dance party up
there. What the hell's going on?
Our internet is down. That's what's going on.
Oh,
and
really?
Yes. The power went out right before we started this podcast, and I asked everyone on Twitter to send in their comments and questions, and guess what? I can't get them.
Oh.
Except...
It's always good when an internet-based company loses their internet.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's always surprising when that happens that smooth jazz is what goes on.
We're going to walk out there and everybody's going to be drinking cocktails with sunglasses on, dancing.
Well, I did get one person commented on Twitter before our internet went down, and it was by Richard Mack. That's his Twitter name. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming his name's Richard, but... He said he'd like to see a podcast on a band just starting out and how to develop a following and get gigs and I guess follow along with their career. And those are that's a cool thing that I've thought about doing, taking someone from the beginning and follow along. And that's, the Moving Rushmore podcast we did was, because their podcast itself was doing that, was kind of a glimpse at that idea. The hard thing is keeping it going, that's a lot of work to just follow along. And I was doing that for a particular band through the whole recording process when my hard drive got stolen. And that was like, oh, man. but keep
on listening to the podcast, because Kevin and I are both in new bands.
That's right.
And we're sharing our experiences. So.
That's right.
Did you ever see that Sting movie, Bring on the Night?
No.
It was this documentary about him making his first album after The Police. And it's really funny because he starts it off saying, like, this is a documentary about a band that's just starting, and like we're just totally new, and like it, like as if it was really a fresh start. I'm like, you're Sting. Come on, this isn't like starting in your grandmother's garage or something.
Well, maybe he hit hard times and was at his grandma's house.
Because the first scene is them practicing songs in his
castle. Speaking of movies, I have to put a plug in here for a movie. If you have not seen Anvil, the story of Anvil.
Oh, I saw it last night.
You did?
It was awesome.
It is so amazing.
I still haven't seen it.
It is by far one of the best music movies I've seen in a long time.
It was so touching. I thought the directors did a great job of like balancing laughing at them and then just absolutely loving them.
Yeah, I thought you walk out of there like all excited for them. I was like so happy for them. And it's just like, but it starts out like a real life Spinal Tap. I mean, not like goofy where they're making jokes and stuff, but it's like, you guys, oh my gosh, these guys are so stuck back in that era. But in the end, you're like, good for them.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
I ended up doing karaoke till 2:45 last night because I was so amped from the movie.
So go see it. I think it's out on DVD. It's still playing in some like select theaters, like the theaters in your city that play more like the independent films. But I think it's also out on DVD as well.
Oh, it comes out June 15th.
Oh,
I looked today.
Okay,
on DVD.
June 15th. It's definitely worth it. You will be glad you watched it.
All right, I'm going to do that.
Yeah, you do that. System failure. We had a major system failure here at CD Baby. I think I mentioned at the top of the podcast how we had a power outage before we started recording. Well, the whole thing went down again, and we are in a dark room with no windows.
That's right. Actually, you know how when you listen to the podcast, you can't see our faces? Now, when we record the podcast, we can't see our faces.
We're literally in pitch black darkness, only able to see by the light of my computer screen because it is battery powered. And the podcast probably sounds a little different at this point now because we are now using the handheld recorder that we normally use to record the show, but we're using the mics on it. And we're going to press on in the dark. And
show must go on.
That's right. Hopefully the building doesn't burn down because we're going to be in big trouble then. So we're going to continue. We're going to get into the phone calls like we said. And we're going to finish this thing. Here we go.
CD Baby. CD Baby Podcast.
Message line. 206-426-5683.
The number you have dialed.
206-426-5683.
Hey, Kevin, Chris, and Robert. My name is, I better not tell you my name or where I'm from, but I'm a longtime CD Baby podcast listener, first-time caller. Your interview with David Gray left me a little bit out of breath, and I thought I'd call to shed some light from a band's perspective on the whole reality TV show and music relationship. You see, a couple of years ago, I was managing a band, and we got several emails and phone calls practically begging us to fly out to Las Vegas and audition for a new band reality show. After a couple of weeks of phone interviews and extensive and invasive background checks and literally 3.5 pounds of paperwork, well, we ended up signing a contract which gave our band the privilege of auditioning for the show. I can't tell you any of the details of the contract until 3 years after the last episode aired, or I'll be liable for $5 million. But basically, the contract states that the company gets everything and the band is, well, screwed, with the remote possibility that you're famous for about 15 minutes. So we do the audition, and we don't make out too well, and we get cut, and our very young frontman is quite discouraged. He feels bad about the rejection. We end up on the cutting room floor, and we don't even get shown on the audition episode. So we've learned several things from our band reality show TV experience. First of all, reality TV is about TV, not about music. Even the band that eventually won the whole season has no record out after a couple of years since the show was canceled. Number two, we had a blast hanging out with those amazing musicians and bands from all over the country. Good musicians always get along. Number three, we wouldn't do it again. It has made us, especially our frontman, more determined than ever not to look for some magic bullet, some instant discovery by a TV show or anybody else to make our music career. We plan to do the work and forge our own path. Our experience has shown us that a shortcut can often turn out to be a dead end. So guys, thanks for the great podcast. Keep up the great work. We'll talk to you later.
So thanks, Anonymous, whoever you are, for that call. We don't want you to go to prison or jail or owe $5 million. But I thought it was an interesting take on, you know, obviously they're a good band. If somebody wanted them to participate in some show, and how I think the negative side of what, you know, what we were talking about, how the media has made them feel that they need some magic bullet, otherwise it's over for them.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it does, you know, I mean, those shows are exploitative by nature. And if you do value your art beyond being a pop star, I would not recommend, you know, investing your time and energy in signing contracts, because that's a dangerous place, dangerous people to put your music in the hands of.
Yeah. And, you know, we mentioned the story of Anvil, the movie, earlier. And I think one thing that I have discovered is, you know, I'm now 34, and is that your art is something you're going to be building on for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. And hopefully you're getting better and better and better. And, you know, I remember when I was in Small Town Poets and we were getting signed and I was 22, I thought, this is it. If we got to make this happen now, you know, not really thinking now, looking back, going, you know, we had plenty of time to develop and build. And what I do now, I think, is far more mature than what I did then, which is hopefully what happens as you grow.
Well, I hope that caller will call us back after the 3-year contract is over and give us all the dirt.
You can probably find it online somewhere. Yeah. All right, well, we're going to jump into our second set of calls.
Hi, guys. My name is Dan Coyle. I just released my new album,
random thoughts and incomplete sentences on CD Baby. And I just want to let you guys know I appreciate absolutely everything that you do. I think I've learned everything that I have learned about the music industry or the business or how to make things happen from CD Baby. And I just wanted to give you a quick heads up that, you know, one of your greatest ideas is have a story, you know, have something else to offer, have an angle. And on the new album, which I just released, so it's in 2009, I went way back to an email that I received from a fan in 2007 who was, I mean, through a series of emails, I found out she was dying of cancer and she was in the hospital and she loved to listen to my music because she said that it kind of made her feel so uplifted and kind of made the time pass and made everything a little less painful. Well, I wrote her a song and emailed it to her, and I included it on this album. And I put that entire story on the inside cover, and hoping that it kind of gives it a much more personalized feel to the album. And I probably wouldn't have had that idea to do that had it not been for you guys. And good news is that fan, she is completely recovered and is in remission now for a little over a year, and it's an amazing, amazing story. But enough about me. I appreciate everything that you guys do. Thanks so much. If anyone wants to check out my music, it's www.dancoyle.com, DanCoyle. Thanks a lot, guys. Bye.
Hey, guys. This is Alexian from Orlando, Florida. That's Alex with an I-A-N. And you can find me at cdbaby.com/Alexian. I'm a little bit behind in the podcast episodes, but I thought I'd share anyways. I'm calling to share a Don't Make This Mistake horror story that I think you'll get a chuckle out of. I'm a pagan Wiccan recording artist, and years ago I booked a venue to host a pagan musical concert and talent show in the downtown Orlando, Florida area. What I didn't know was that there was a major fundamentalist Christian convention going on next door. Now, this venue just happened to connect directly to a major parking lot facility. So during the concert, we kept getting men in suits and ladies carrying Bibles entering our concert space, thinking it was where they were supposed to be going for their convention. I think that they kept hearing the music and thought it was the entrance to their show. And to their surprise, they found a bunch of hippie-type hugging, tree-hugging pagans, some of us wearing pentacles, all staring at them. It was truly two worlds colliding repeatedly, all the while the music never stopped. So just some words of advice. Check to see if there is any other functions going on around the area of the venue that you're booking when planning out your concerts. You never know what the universe may decide to throw at you. And I guess I should mention, I just released my first music video online at YouTube and MySpace for my song Listen to the Wind. You can check it out at youtube.com/LordAlexian and also at myspace.com/LordAlexian. I had to use the Lord because Alexian was already taken on both spaces. Who would have known there was another Alexian? Anyway, thanks a lot, guys. I really enjoy the podcast, and I've learned so much from listening. I look forward to more. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Wow. Hey, thanks for those calls. We had a great story from Dan Coyle, how he used a fan who was inspired, you know, his music meant a lot to, and he took that story and wrote a song and kind of built it into the story of his album, which is really cool. And then Lord Alexian, or Alexian.
Yeah, that
sounded like quite a scene.
And, you know, that's a great story as well. He could use that to promote his album.
Man, I wish I was there.
I know.
That would have been awesome. Yeah, clash of cultures.
I was curious. Be curious to know is if someone ever, you know, someone came in and sat down and like how long it took them to figure out, maybe this isn't where I'm supposed to be.
Or maybe it is.
Maybe it is. So thanks for those calls. And if, let me see, that was supposed to be read before.
What, you can't see your notes there?
Yeah, I'm having a hard time reading the notes by a computer screen. let's see here. Well, you can, if you'd like to give us a call and comment on this episode or a previous episode, you can do that at 206-426-5683, or you can email us at info@cdbabypodcast.com. We're also on Twitter, cdbaby_podcast. So we love hearing from you guys. It's great when it's a conversation as opposed to us just blabbing about stuff. So join in on the conversation, and the computer screen just went out, and so we're in the dark. Total darkness, I think. I think we're going to end. I can't see any more of my notes.
How do you get out of this?
I don't know.
Which way? So, I don't know which way the door is.
So we're going to go. So if we forgot something, just email it. We'll get it when the internet's working again. So we'll catch you guys next time.
If we find our way out of here, we'll see you next week.
That's right. So take it easy.
Is that you touching my leg?
That's Robert.
Both my hands are here, so if someone's touching me, we're in trouble.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.